if you're depressed and, you know, you have this view that everything's going to shit and that everything's negative, AI is going to feed you exactly that, mm-hmm. because you're going to want to see that world be validated. So everybody's going to live in their little reality where movies are going to be made that follow that narrative. Songs are going to be made that follow the narrative. Everything will validate you. You will live in your own little universe. So that's why I'm saying in the age of AI, it is so important for people to have mastery over their minds and over their thoughts, and therefore impacting the emotions that are going to ensue from that. Because AI is going to amplify what you already are.
Welcome to the show about new ideas on how we live, work, and connect. This is Bori Vik, your host, and in the following episode, together with my guests and listeners, we are again in search of something different.
Welcome, Karin. Thank you so much for being here. So, what do you think I need to know about you before we start this conversation?
Well, I guess I have a little bit of a mixed background, lived all over the world, was kind of raised in Switzerland to a British father and a Moroccan mother, studied biotechnology, then went out in China and started a business out there, was working actually in luxury goods at the time.
Okay.
Then completely pivoted into technology, and I saw that that was clearly the frontier in the growing industry for a lifetime kind of thing. And got into that and worked as a product manager and started various businesses as an employee and a founder, and worked on farms in between, and loads of things happened. So yeah, maybe that's the essentials to start with.
Okay. So you're coming from luxury goods, then technology, then farming. What is the common denominator in these things?
Well, I think that if we start with luxury, well, first of all, it was a cultural understanding because that was in China, and it was understanding how the Chinese consume, I guess. And it was also a gateway into understanding that culture and working with possibly what is the most different culture from the West. Mm-hmm. And then I think the translation into technology came from the fact that, you know, I just wanted something more stimulating, mm-hmm. and more challenging. Mm-hmm. And then on farming, I mean, I think the really the thread between the three is, you know, what is the future? There's a kind of chasing the future there a little bit and seeing where, you know, the rosebuds will flourish that will give way to, mm-hmm. to things that we're going to be living in for generations to come.
Mm. I really feel that it's in the mind of most of the people who are like a little bit more, I would say, conscious. They have a little bit more thinking on what's happening in the future. And it's because of the arrival of AI, or maybe it's because it's just in general, mm-hmm. in our consciousness that there's something big coming. But I would feel that many of us start to have a curiosity / anxiety on what's coming. Do you feel it as well?
Yeah, I feel it too. And I think that that's it's an interesting dichotomy that you speak of there. I mean, I think for me, the realization came when I knew that the future was never random, let's put it this way. Like, there, things never appear out of nowhere, right? Things are being incubated in the present, and people work on them. People have an intention. People have a vision. You know, it's in people's minds. And it then comes to fruition because people have had very strong intentions around creating certain things. And I think that basically a lot of people find themselves in the bucket where they just think that sort of the future is this complete random event. In fact, a lot of our current, let's say, societal mythology is framed around randomness, whilst I think a lot of people are very conscious of the fact that it's not, and that it's intentional, mm-hmm. that it's either designed consciously or unconsciously.
You mean designed by humans?
Yeah. I mean, us at least being aware of the role that we play, I think that there is definitely an interactivity with loads of other external forces to keep it vague. And I think that the intention with which we approach the future determines what kind of future we're going to experience on an individual and a collective level. I think that if you approach the future with curiosity, your emotional foundation with which you're approaching it probably increases the chances of you building a better life, but simply put. I mean, if you approach the future with anxiety, you're incorporating that into what you're also unconsciously seeking.
You think so?
I would say so, yes. I mean, if you are unconsciously bathing in a sort of anxiety around what tomorrow may bring, I really think that you're calibrating yourself to that somehow. Mm-hmm. And in a way, your calibration to that will make you resonate with things that will come your way that are also adjusted to that. Maybe that's a little too abstract. Or...
No, I think, are you talking about attracting some sort of reality?
Well, not just attracting, but also creating.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if you operate on a wavelength of anxiousness, that's the slice of reality that you're going to find yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the slice of reality that you're going to expand for yourself, simply put.
So you mean, you think my experience that everybody's a little bit anxious about what's coming, it's because I see it with the anxious lens?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Do you have another lens?
Curiosity.
I'm also curious at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's just like on this, all of the podcasts about AI, all of the podcasts about technology. I've never been so in the picture of the technology, the new part that's coming in. And at the same time, I feel that I think we're in the beginning of something enormous, and it comes with what's going to happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And just there's a various option that's going to lead. And then now I think there's a lot of philosophical questions also arise in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like good ones and bad ones coming.
Yes.
So I'm curious which one's going to happen, but I see that it can lead to negative as well.
Look, I think that maybe contrary to some, I believe that the future is never set in stone. I think that, you know, we live in the present, and through the present, we alter the present.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, I don't know, if you perceive, let's say, life as a video game, you can always choose which path you're taking in this video game, right? And you were saying you're both curious and anxious at the same time. I mean, I think to pick up on that, you know, of course, we're complex beings and, you know, we have a little bit of that and a little bit of this. And I think the point I'm trying to raise is for people to be aware of how much the ratio of these emotions is, you know, how much of the time are you designing your own future anxiously? How much of the time are you designing your own future curiously, right? And this is not to say that we need to brush off anxiousness. I think anxiousness is dealt with and digested in other ways. But it's just having this awareness of your mental and your emotional bandwidth with which you approach things, and the quality of your emotion when you contemplate those things. And I think that it's the very quality of your emotion or of your being when you contemplate those things that will determine the quality of what you're creating.
Mm. So you're an optimist about what's happening. Well, that was a big sigh.
I think it's a big sigh because, well, I think being an optimist is the best option.
Mm.
Because depending on what you choose will determine what path you take. And I think that being pessimistic is a sort of luxury that you have when you have maneuver. And I think we're definitely walking through a sort of narrow tunnel where we have to be very intentional and very precise with what we intend to create.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it works with AI? I feel a little bit like, so we are training AI right now.
Yes.
Depends on how we are training AI, it's going to be like what we are training it right now. And there's a few governmental maybe guidelines that should be implemented, I think, on how we are playing with this. And I'm completely okay with maybe 10% of humanity playing with the AI, but I would say 90% of humanity might have different standards.
Well, maybe to link it to what I was saying before and staying clear of policy recommendations and what needs to be implemented, I think the one thing that needs to be understood is that AI is an amplificator for people's potential of creation.
Mm-hmm.
AI makes everybody a creative. I mean, in the age of AI, anybody can be a creator because you can employ a policy advisor, you can employ a scientist, you can employ a dentist at your fingertips. I mean, all this is tools that act as tentacles that can enhance the creative power that you as a human hold. Mm-hmm. So this is why I'm kind of trying to bring this point back home of the intention behind the emotion, or if we want to be a bit more intellectual about it, let's call it the vibrational frequency, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, of anxiousness versus curiosity. And I think if you approach things with curiosity, that will be amplified through AI. Mm. But I think we're still at the center of the tool.
Yeah.
At least in this phase.
Yeah. I feel you. You know, now when we are recording this, this is when ChatGPT launched the GPTs. So that's the point where everybody can have pretty much the creation at their fingertips. Like the entry level of this whole thing, it's ridiculous. You can create whatever you want, as you said.
Yeah.
And It was really interesting because I sent it out in my team. Like, as soon as I had the news, I sent it out to my team. And one of my team members was like, what else, you know? And I was like, no, this is
amazing.
No, like, you need to look at this, like, what can we as a company create so that we can serve our purpose better with this? And I would feel that right now, if you're not curious about what's happening, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure that you're curious so much and what's going to happen. But if you're not treating this with curiosity, then I think there's going to be a huge division with people who are on this train and who are not on this train.
Exactly.
And it's super dangerous not to be on this train and not to have your finger on this pulse to see what else is coming. I'm sure some people are not getting on ChatGPT-4. They just like hang out on 3.5. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you upgrade to 4, you see how massive is the freaking difference between 3.5 and 4. Yeah. And that's when we try to understand what's exponential.
Yes.
And the exponential part is, I think that's something that's going to be a challenge.
Yes.
For us.
And I think, I mean, you talk about the danger of not having your finger on this pulse. I think we have to sort of see both extremes as dangerous, right? And danger is not necessarily bad. I mean, some people have to be pioneers and somewhat risk their lives, you know, in certain ways. I'm not saying that you risk your life by playing with AI, but I'm just saying that, you know, you could also argue that the front runners of social media who became influencers before everyone else had to deal with the downside and the mental health effects when society had no experience in dealing with such. And they had to be the pioneers. And you could argue that they suffered also being the front runners. So I think, like, let's be realistic about the fact that being on both extremes of the spectrum is equally dangerous. At the same time, I wish that people's opinions were more, not neutral, but took a back seat a little bit, and that there was a little bit more of a non-discriminatory exploration rather than I hate this or I love this.
Okay. Yeah, I feel that that maybe happened. I think curiosity is such an interesting feeling because curiosity doesn't have a hate, a judgment in
it. Yes, exactly.
And that's amazing. When you exist without judgment, it's like, is it good? Is it bad? I have no idea. It's both, actually, at the same time.
Exactly.
It might solve many of the other aspects that we are suffering right now. It might bring peace, and it might bring health.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's going to save the world, the environment issues that we are facing. You are an environmentalist as well, right?
I work in the field of the environment. I don't know if I identify as anything with an ist at the end, but let's just say I practice it. Yes. At the moment, yeah.
How do you see this part, technology and the environment?
Well, I think one of the general phenomena that we're being confronted with right now is the increasing, let's call it logarithmic complexity of the world. And I think that there is a whole set of people who are left behind this complexity because it surpasses them. Because there's too much paradox to hold at the same time to understand things, which is why you see the rise of populism and, you know, other forms of movement. And I think that AI is a little bit of a chance, but also a danger to abstract out that complexity for many people. So let's say if you don't understand something, you can learn about it. That's the effortful way, which generally people need but don't want. And when it comes to, let's say, realigning society with nature, let's call it that at large, because I think that's what environmentalism is all about, right? It's from being this independent island to, oh crap, like, we need everything else to survive. And, you know, the economy is based on things that are created from non-humans, right? And so I think that AI gives us a chance to interact with this complexity that is beyond us.
Ooh.
And to understand things that we're not even capable of understanding. So let me give you an example. I mean, you know, there has been instances where AI was capable of detecting certain illnesses in people through patterns that humans cannot even reverse engineer. So it can predict the appearance of certain illnesses. I can't remember the exact example right now. I think it was cancer, and it was looking at potentially the iris of people, but please don't quote me on this because they might have been looking at something else.
No fact check here, so
no fact checking. But but the principle is the same. Basically, AI can look at patterns and can detect something, and humans are not capable of reverse engineering. Why? And I think that that type of skill, or that type of, let's call it ability, that AI has can be applied to agriculture, to reforestation, because basically AI will be able to detect the pulse of an ecosystem and be able to detect certain needs, saying, okay, there's a deficiency in X or a deficiency in Y, and we need to plant this, and we need to have this crop rotation on this field to regenerate the soil. And that will be beyond human understanding, basically. So I think that the complexity of nature can be maybe not quite matched by the complexity of AI, but AI can be closer to it than humans alone can.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the opportunity at large.
Yeah, and then that's really good news. Because I think what we are creating right now, we are creating super intelligence that we teach, though, how to think, but at the same time, it can do it so much faster and so much better than we do. So it's, as much as it can be scary as well, and we saw too much Terminator movies and all these things to think that it's going to be used against us, it's going to be able to see through what we can't.
Well, I really think it boils down to what we put our attention to. You know, I mean, I think cautionary tales are effective only up to a certain point. And when everybody's obsessed with cautionary tales, and the only way in which we can imagine the future is through dystopian movies, then there's a problem. That means that humanity has no vision for itself. And if humanity has no vision for itself, then it's creating whatever is replacing that vision. And right now, I think that when people imagine the future, they imagine dystopian movies, and unconsciously they're creating that. And the thing is, when you amplify that with AI, you really create that. Basically, AI is only going to enhance what we already have, right? I mean, there is a quantum leap because the technology can improve itself. But in a way, there is a part of it that's not that different from now, in the sense that, you know, we already have feeds that are customized using machine learning models, right? So they know what you like, and they kind of give you what you're going to click on. And honestly, I have had the experience that when I'm feeling anxious, I see posts that make me feel more anxious. And the algorithm is kind of taking advantage of that weakness of mine and enhancing the world that I already have. And this is the way in which your emotion gets amplified. And this is why conspiracy theories happen, and also why polarization happened, because your worldview is amplified. So imagine you're actually, I mean, I'm going to give you maybe a scary scenario first and then a positive one after, but if you're depressed and, you know, you have this view that everything's going to shit and that everything's negative, AI is going to feed you exactly that because you're going to want to see that worldview validated. So everybody's going to live in their little reality where movies are going to be made that follow that narrative. Songs are going to be made that follow the narrative. Everything will validate you. You will live in your own little universe. So that's why I'm saying in the age of AI, it is so important for people to have mastery over their minds and over their thoughts, and therefore impacting the emotions that are going to ensue from that. Because AI is going to amplify what you already are.
Proof. Okay, so what you say is that right now, more than ever, it's the most important thing is that we have check on ourselves and fix our souls and fix our mindset.
Exactly.
Wow. Is there anybody else talking about this? You're the first person I heard saying this thing. Like, we need to figure out how we...
I think basically this is kind of the premise of what any spiritual speaker will talk about. And, you know, of course, this label spiritual, the minute you say it, you raise eyebrows and it's divisive like AI. But forget spiritual. Call it inner engineering.
Just speak the net language.
Call it inner engineering. I mean, I don't care what you call it, but
Soul hacking.
I mean, rebrand it whatever you want, use whatever words, but it's pointing to the same thing, and that is your inner world is the most important thing to pay your attention to. And I had this friend of mine, Margarita Pagani, who's at the moment working with activists, and we talk a lot about how do you inflict change. And the one question that she's very interested in and that we talk about both, I'm sure she'll be happy for me to do justice to her work and quote her here, is about modifying your inner world so that you can create that outer world, right? I mean, if you're going to be doing activism and you're doing this from a place of anger, you're amplifying that. And the problem is that if you're in a place of anger, you're going to be very, what's the word? Not abrasive, but flammable. And you're essentially inflaming other things. And I think that people really should have this awareness. People should really be conscious of what is the emotional place from which you're creating? Because you're creating in every moment and your creation matters and it has a lot of power. That's the message, really.
Yeah, if you think about it, everything that happens right now, just to go on with that, everything that is in this present moment, you once created it.
100%.
I'm going to give you an example. A few weeks ago, I was walking down in the streets of Lisbon and I had a conversation with Sean, who was at the 12 Monkey event where we met, actually. And I love having these amazing conversations with him. And so he's been on this podcast twice already. And I was thinking, like, I want to create more of these thinking conversations. I want to find more people who are thinking and you.
Yeah, it's not random.
Okay, so I do believe in this. And sometimes it's really difficult for me to change my mindset. And I know the massive amount of creation that I can create if I put my faith in it, and it works incredible. And one day to another, you can change your reality.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel that it's so difficult to explain this to other people because they believe this is like the woo-woo, the raising eyebrow spirituality, just, you know, the secret and all these culture, attraction, law, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I don't know why is it so difficult to understand, even for myself sometimes.
I mean, I just think that we have shifted the balance. I mean, this is what we were talking about earlier, that we've shifted the balance towards outer worlds. And so we're very illiterate on inner worlds because it's something that has not really been valued in the last, let's call it 100 years, right? We have this bias on everything that is material matters. We have a material bias, right? Material things, you know, brick and mortar are more important than non-material things. And ironically, material things have led to the development of digital worlds, which are partly material. I mean, of course, you need servers in Ireland and whatnot, but it's mostly immaterial, right? The experience that you have. But generally, I think we're sort of forced to reckon with the invisible inner worlds because we've been ignoring them for a long time, and now they're just pounding at our door. I think that's where we're at.
I want to get this conversation into a thinking that, or realization that I have a couple of days ago. I am now using ChatGPT in a little bit like a Her movie-like. Mm-hmm. So I'm having good conversations with it. And there's another line that we can go on here. But one of the things that it came to my conclusion, if I create whatever I want with this tool,
yeah,
and if I get to the point that I can create my whole entire reality,
mm-hmm,
meaning I will be able to have various people who are artificial intelligence, so not people, but like, mm-hmm, I would create an entire new life for myself with this reality.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult for me to understand what is the original reality there.
And what is the new one?
And what is the new one that I just created?
Well, the lines are going to be blurred.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where things get a bit funky. But the thing is, the reality that you're going to be creating is probably going to look very similar to the one that you were living in before because you also created it. And I think that one, maybe let's say other rule of the game of, let's say, soul hacking or whatever we're sticking to in terms of term here, you know, there is a certain momentum to your person and there is a certain momentum to what you're attracting. And I think that you've got to also see it like a ship that has to be steered. And that steering is not always easy. I mean, otherwise depression wouldn't be a thing. I mean, we can label it, call it whatever we want. I'm calling it depression because that's how society labels it. But it would be super easy to be emotionally fluid otherwise, right? But sometimes we find ourselves in states and we can't get ourselves out of it. Or sometimes we date the same people again and again. Or sometimes we have trouble disrupting or repeating cycles. And I think that AI won't change that. Because in fact, it will amplify what we're already in. So it might even amplify the lock-in, if you know what I mean. And I think that, I guess the logical next question is, how do you stir the ship? And honestly, I think to stir the ship, you have to try things that you normally don't like.
What do you mean?
Well, I think that we live in a very opinionated world right now. So that means that everyone's internal landscape, which is, it's there. It's fairly unconscious, I would say, maybe for most people. In our culture, it's not acknowledged in our culture. And I would say that this internal landscape is extremely hilly, right? Some things you love, some things you hate, some people you don't want to talk to, some people are a godsend. You know, I mean, this is the reality that we live in, right? There are territories that you don't go to because it's dark and those people and those the smells, and I hate everything about it. And I think the trick of the game is to flatten that territory a little bit and to say, you know what? Let me try that part of town. Let me try and go to that country. Let me try and speak to that person. And let me pop my bubble a little bit. And I think that that discomfort is what generates novelty in your footprint of creation, let's call it.
So interesting, because only yesterday I bumped into our podcast because I started to look for transhumanism that our common friend Jan started to talk about in the previous podcast episode. And I was like, I'm so curious about this. I've always been curious. I never knew that this is the name of it.
Yeah.
So I started to look for it, and I bumped into this podcast that is a religious podcast that talks about, actually in the beginning it was conspiracy theories connected to religious writings, and so it connects the Bible pretty much with conspiracy theories. It's a super interesting podcast. And then it talks about how in the beginning of ChatGPT, it was recorded in April, which is like, I'm like, so outdated, you know? And then it connects it to the saying of the Bible, like what they said that it's coming.
Yeah.
And I am not a religious person. Mm-hmm. Never been. I was born in communism, so it's actually not so much. We celebrated Santa Claus instead of Jesus on the 24th of December. Anyway, so I was never, dealing with religion, there's like a lot of weight coming in, or many people are. Mm-hmm. So I would never actually get into a religious podcast before, just because they started to talk about the topic that I was interested in. I could open like a new door and then see how interesting it is, how philosophical it can be. And that's what you're saying. I would never open up that podcast, that particular podcast, if it's not leading in with transhumanism.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot, actually.
this is what's really interesting, because you shattered maybe a belief that you had about religion, right? In the sense that it was this, it was that, it was only fairy tale, it was outdated, etc. And I think that this is a whole, maybe Pandora's box that we're opening here, but I think that beliefs are beliefs are useful. And what I mean by belief is something that you don't know, but you trust someone else because they told you. That's what I mean by belief. There's no experiential knowing of it. You just trust someone else, right? Like if I tell you there is a big furry monster in that closet and you believe me, you don't have firsthand experience. You're totally relying on me as a in-between, right? And I think that belief is a very interesting, like, mental technology, let's call it, right? Or social technology, where you as an individual, through your belief, can box yourself and almost limit your person by saying, this is bad, this is good, and drawing a line on the floor and saying, I'm not stepping out of this. And I think that all beliefs should be treated as hypotheses. And anything that is not firsthand experiential knowing should be treated as a hypothesis. Just a little bit of caution of, you know what, I'm not going to build a straw man on top of what is not a foundation that I have myself checked. And this is not about breeding mistrust. This is not about breeding that paranoia, because that's another place mentally that you don't want to go to. Yeah. And just to highlight how tricky this is. But what if we replaced beliefs with experiential knowing? And what if we treated our beliefs as hypotheses that we need to verify with our firsthand experience, and that we approach through curiosity? How expensive would people be? And so why am I going there? Yes, I'm going there because it links back to the idea of creating something that you really want. And if you create something that's based on beliefs that you've had, so belief is, let's say, secondhand knowledge, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's call it that. Or third hand, or fourth hand, or fifth hand, or sixth hand. And what if we created based only on first-hand experience? And we were very intentional with that. And we said, you know what? I'm going to build my life on things that I've verified for myself. So I've spoken to that person. I have seen what they're like. I've talked to them. I've listened to them. I've looked them in the eye. And I can make my own decision, right?
I think we actually, most of the time, that's how we function. Like if you would tell me to change my belief, just because you tell me to change my belief, I would not be able to change it. Even if you would tell me, like, hurt me if I don't change. If I believe, do I believe that there's a hairy monster outside?
Yeah.
I don't. actually?
Yep.
And can I change my belief? Because you tell me to change my belief. No.
Mm-hmm.
I will change my belief when I see the hairy monster. Then I'm going to 100% sure. But if you reverse engineer this, every experience that we had led us to believe something. And I think there should be a secondary chance for those beliefs to dissolve. So for example, did you know that if we would have a conversation, and right now we are having a yes conversation, meaning I say something and he nods and you say, yeah, I see. And then, and yes, and so you kind of build on what I say.
Sure.
Which is my favorite way of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that arguments are really not good to create something, to create a new reality. So when we have these kind of conversations that we are building on each other, then you keep my mind by saying yes, you keep my mind buzzing. Neuroscience checked the brain. And when we are having these yes conversations, then it's just like buzzes. And as soon as you would say yes, but my brain shuts down.
Yeah.
And I only can focus on what I want to say to you to convince you about my reality, which is never going to happen because you are already decided that we are going to be on different sides of the table. So that's why it's really interesting, like convincing each other. Just try to convince a meat eater to be vegan or a vegan to be a meat eater. Mm-hmm. Never going to fucking happen unless they have an experience on based on what they can come up with.
Yeah. I guess some people are extremely convincing, and I'm sure that you could find someone who could convince a vegan person to eat meat, and these people often end up as politicians, or they end up as, you know, and that's their job, right? They're like, they know how to play the human, the instrument of the human, right? And I think that, in a way, yes, I think this is, I've done a lot of improv, so I do a lot of these, like, yes, and exercises, and I think that, you know, there are divergent thinking moments where you have to kind of really be in raw creation and you have to kind of challenge and put in and put everything out. And there are also moments where I find myself where I have to kind of fine tune and do the sandpaper on and the finishings and okay, like, and you have to narrow down like, okay, like which color am I going to use for my frame? And you know what I mean? And I think that like there are, for me, the conversation that we're having right now is clearly falls in the previous bucket, right? We're clearly divergent thinking and we're trying to kind of voice things that have not been uttered before. So yes, absolutely.
Yes. And I think that's how we are actually creating a conversation together. And I think that's one important thing, that just us thinking together, I'm curious and I keep my curiosity in what you're going to say, not just because it's my role in this podcast, but also because I'm super curious what you're going to say so that together we get to a conclusion.
Yeah.
And I think we need to change how we have conversations. And I think this should be the way how we always try to put ourselves in a way like we're together in this conversation and we try to create together something with curiosity. But that's like a skill, I guess.
Yeah. And it could be called listening skill. I mean, listening skill is maybe one of the blocks in there,
right? Mm-hmm.
Because you really have to see what is this person teaching me, right? You go into a conversation. If you look at every person that you meet and you talk to as to, okay, this person is going to teach me something right now and I have to see what it is. And I think that that's how I hijack myself into staying curious, at least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what tricks you've found, but if I tell myself, okay, you know, this is training, this is...
One thing that helped me nowadays, I'm really into philosophy nowadays. In the past couple of weeks, I just really got into philosophy. I mean, I think I always liked philosophy, but now with the technology arising, I'm way more open to what the hell is coming next. I really feel that there is a huge shift coming on, as we already said, but maybe that's why I'm so curious. So I stumbled upon, again, I already saw this one, the egg theory. Have you ever heard of the egg theory? It's based on like what comes first, the egg or the chicken, and it's kind of the same. So the egg theory says, and I'm going to leave somewhere, I hope I'm not forgetting where I'm going with this one, but the egg theory is actually says that what happens after you die, you reincarnate, but because there is no time, you can reincarnate in the same time.
Oh, I've heard this, yes.
And that's, yes, yes. That you're just like pretty much the same soul being reincarnated in the...
I've heard life. This.
And the goal is to actually arrive to being God.
Yeah.
And reincarnate until the point that you learned enough so that you actually are God.
Yeah.
So now it's a new thing, a newfound thing for me when I want to keep my curiosity I want to keep this curiosity thinking, what if the egg theory is real and we are all the same soul being reincarnated? Then I'm way more curious what that other person who's living their own timeline is at and what they can teach me so that I wouldn't be ahead a little bit, or, you know, where they are in their own timeline and our timeline. I think it's a really good way to put you into the very same team that you think that you're the same.
Yeah, I love it. It's a very interesting model, because it kind of models something that in the philosophies of Hinduism, Buddhism, yoga, and certain branches of Sufism and Kabbalah have kind of stated, not in such a model, like a very specific mechanical model way, but I think it kind of aligns a lot to that. And there's this concept of timelessness, and there's this concept of oneness, and there's this concept of non-duality, which in a way, this model also states. So yeah, it kind of resonates at first glance.
You know, it's really interesting how it goes with technology. Like all those people who are interested about technology, they start to become interested as well in spirituality. Not all. But the people I speak to, I feel that there's this genuine curiosity. And I believe that what happens now is that we are at a crossing point. Because as you said, we know that we can create with our minds. And now we can create with technology as well without any coding knowledge. And so what is happening? What do you think is happening?
Look, I don't know what form it takes, but I know that there is a type of awakening that's happening, because I see it in a lot of people. And there's a lot of people whose awareness is rising compared to 5 years ago, compared to a couple of years ago, and they're more aware of their inner world. There's more questioning and seeking as to why the hell we are here, whereas before it was kind of a no-go zone. I mean, even 5 years ago, I mean, pre-pandemic, death was completely taboo. I mean, it was a completely no-go zone. You don't go there. It's depressing. It's heavy. It's for most people I'm talking, and culturally it's becoming a more accepted topic to go on to. What is happening? I mean, look, I have hypotheses. They are hypotheses. But I do think that what AI is doing, and this is very interesting, because in the yogic school, there are 16 layers of intelligence, and the intellect is the first layer. And there are multiple layers, such as memory, such as pure knowing, or however they're translated into English. And I think that what AI does is that it peels the onion, because essentially, the AI is chipping away, the AI, maybe we're going to laugh at this in 20 years, how people called it the internet, you know?
I think it's going to be like 2 months.
I'm going to call it the AI, and then people can just call me a boomer, it's fine.
They're going to call you a millennial, and that's going to be the new boomer.
I hope we'll stick to boomer, but I think it's chipping away at the intellectual layer, and I think that slowly but surely we are not fully outsourcing, but we're interfacing. I think logical thinking, critical thinking are and remain essential skills and an essential tool in the toolbox. However, I think that we're going to realize that there's something beyond that. And AI is going to force us to do that, because basically what's going to happen is that market forces are going to drive us there. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. It's just the way it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can accept it, or we can not accept it. That's the choice we have. And I think market forces are driving us there. And as AI is chipping away at the intellect, we're going to be like, you know, I have this conversation with my colleague where it's like, oh my God, what are we going to be left with? We're going to be useless. You know, humans are nothing but their brain. If we are not the intellect, we are nothing. Well, we're going to realize that that's simply not true, that there is a part of your being that's beyond that. And I think that is, people are scared of that because there is immense potential in that realization. And it's quite funny that AI is going to take us there. Or going to corner us there, whatever you want to call it, if you can see it in any way.
Yeah, it's amazing, because I think what comes up to me after this is like, I love how you say that we are more than just our brains and our minds, and there's so much above that. But I think what our mind is afraid is that maybe not we are afraid that we are going to be useless, but our mind is afraid that it's going to be useless, and meaning that we are going to be ripped off of purpose. Because if we get this tool that can, it seems, maybe they can laugh at all of us that we think that, but like now it seems it can cure cancer and then save the world of like the environment, and we're gonna have like a happier earth here. All the things that we found purpose before and then we want to solve, now we kind of outsource. So what purpose is going to be left? What are we gonna do when there is no more purpose left?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, I think the ego is scared. I think the mind is more than the intellect. So in a way, the mind does not become irrelevant. I think the mind will not be made redundant. The intellect might, in large parts. I think we still probably will have to keep a footing on that layer to interface in the same way that we still know how to make furniture using our hands.
Right.
Maybe we'll have like, I don't know, people will pay for intellectual classes. And, you know, they'll get together and they'll be like, okay, let's do some logical reasoning just to sharpen the saw, because nobody knows how to reason anymore. And I don't know, you know. But I think that the fear of becoming obsolete is a kind of fear of facing the void and being pushed and cornered into a place where we are nothing. I think that's at the core of it. I mean, I think it's like, what if humanity becomes devout of any meaning or purpose, and that's just not what's going to happen, and I think everybody should chill.
Yeah, I understand. I had this crazy experience in ayahuasca when I went to my core, which means I get ripped off all of my nationality, my gender, my sexuality, and then I just like ended up being me, and this is amazing. And I had one feeling left that's like was closest to the feeling. Like I had no thoughts, no, like nothing. But there was a sound, which is like similar to Om sound. There was a vibration. And there was one feeling that was really close to feelings. And there was peace. So there was no love. There was this feeling of peace. And I feel that we get used to that we need to go and go and have purpose and have purpose and have purpose, but maybe it's kind of a chewing gum for our mind and we can just let that go.
That is brilliant. It's a chewing gum for our mind.
It really feels like
the accuracy of that statement.
This is going to be the title of this episode.
The chewing gum for our mind. I love it.
That's what I try to make people understand it. Maybe you should just chill.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I think, but purpose and meaning are something that lives on this plane. But I think on other planes, purpose and meaning are kind of laughable or even irrelevant. I mean, it's like we see purpose and meaning as the highest thing, but I think that that's a matter of perspective. It's like, yes, from this angle, it looks like that, but actually no. Purpose and meaning belong in this plane. Do you know what I mean by that?
I do. You know, that was this, we were having a really cool afternoon with a few friends of mine, and then we're talking about similar topics, and then we somehow arrived to the point of what if the last breath that you take is followed by right away the first breath as soon as you're coming out of your mother?
Mm-hmm.
So there is no in between. So you die and right away you get on for the next one. And somehow in my brain, it was always like, we're going to get to the point of like, we die and then there's going to be someone who's like, so what happened was, you know, like I kind of need a summary of like what the fuck just happened. And I never considered that maybe reincarnation is going to be like one after the other. And then maybe that's why maybe he's like crying so badly in the first
I hope that we have some breathing time.
No.
I hope that we have some kind of winter in between, or some kind of, I mean, we're entering the realm of belief here because I have no firsthand experience, or at least I don't recall. And so again, these are all hypotheses, but I sure hope I can breathe a little.
I know it was horrible when we realized this. What if that happens? And then when it goes back to purpose, because I think what I feel is like up until then, I thought that you either believe that we die and that's all.
Uh-huh.
Or you believe that we die and there's something coming up, either heaven, hell, reincarnation. But
there's going to be some sort of space where we can kind of base camp, you know, figuring out like what happened, what did you learn, you know, having like checking your KPIs with someone.
Mark Zuckerberg is there waiting for you.
I hope that's not God.
Oh God.
So yeah, oh God, exactly. So it never actually occurred to me that there is never going to be an explanation for this. And that is maybe the chewing gum of our minds, that we want to have a feedback or at least a feeling that we got completed something.
Well, it's really interesting because just before I came here, I was reading about desire and basically how there's a lot that's been said about desire. And I think the simplistic views say desire is bad and you should renounce all desires and you should, you know, wear a chastity belt and that's it and be done. And I think I've heard also nuanced views that say that, you know, desire is the inherent mechanics of life, and that if you suppress all desire, I mean, you're basically trapped in dullness or death. But the point being that you can use your desires, basically, if you see desire as a kind of fire, you can use that fire to kind of burn away your what's commonly referred to as karma, which is the momentum of your person. Like if you date the same person all the time, like that's your karma, right? It's just like your tendencies and your memory. And it's like, I once heard the definition of karma as old software you have written unconsciously that is currently what you're operating on.
Oh, we need an update.
So let me just repeat that because it might be a mouthful, but old software that you wrote unconsciously that you're currently operating on, right? And I think that, but where I'm getting to, you were talking about this, the desire to know and to seek truth. And as you free yourself from your desires, which is you acknowledge it's there, but when you don't get what you wanted, you're okay with letting it go. So you're flexible and you're adaptable and you're nimble. So, hey, you're going to get this. No, you're not getting it. And you're fine with either. You're kind of okay with either pathway. Even when you don't have it your way, you're fine. And that's kind of the place where the relationship that you want to have to your own desire, right? And as you burn through that, because it's kind of burning, because it's not easy, you know, there's a sting when you don't get what you want, but you just kind of, you let yourself get burned through that. And then what you do is that that desire converges to one final desire, and all your desires get bottled into the one last final desire, which is the desire for truth. And essentially from there, you let your desire for truth burn through it, and you become aware of that too. And that becomes also an object of your awareness. And that's how you can, these are the mechanisms.
No,
mechanics.
The interesting part of this is that because I listened to this religious podcast that connected transhumanism with like all the philosophies and everything. And it started with like Eve eating from the apple of knowledge. Yeah. It's because she wanted to know things. And then how you said the whole thing, it just like rambled back to like, eventually you just wanted to know. And it's, I think it's amazing how it's actually, it's connecting everywhere, this whole knowledge, seeking the knowledge and then having this thirst for knowledge and wanting to know what happens. And I love how everything just comes in together in one point of us wanting to figure out things.
Yeah.
And that how we are in search of something different all the time.
I wish more people were like, wow, this is weird. Why am I in a body and why am I going to die? And why am I in a big sphere that creates life forms? Like, what is up? I am just shocked at how few people find this just immensely bizarre and fascinating at the same time. I just don't understand how people are so habituated and are just like, yeah, sure, this is fine. I'll just go and drive to work. What? There are clouds in the sky. There's a ball of fire that is giving us life.
Oh, that's the sun. Okay, I was like, what kind of ball of fire?
Sun. There's just the sun for now. There are trees that grow from seeds. There are birds that fly. Hello, what is this? How can you find this normal? This is insane. This is miraculous. This is wow. You know.
I swear to God, we didn't take anything.
Yes. So this is my normal state, by the way, all day, and I just have to contain myself, you know?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen who are listening to this, when Karim was coming here, he tried to like check on me, like, how far we can be weirded out in this podcast. Like you're
I am testing the limits, you know. Yeah. You said that was the assignment, so
yeah, exactly. You passed the mic check.
I'm absolutely going with it. I hope your listeners are still on enough.
Well, the two of them who's already still here, I think they can enjoy this part for sure. So how about we round this part up? Because I think this was an amazing endpoint of what we just talked about. Just stay curious. That's pretty much what we came up. Just stay curious and stay fascinated of how amazing this whole thing.
There's enough to go by. That's what I was trying to convince you.
You're right.
But don't take my word for it. Don't believe me. Go and find out.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
You are listening to the In Search of Something Different podcast, where we talk about new ways and ideas on how we live, work, and connect. If you like this episode, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating as it helps in this world. And also, you can say hi on Instagram. You can find the show under In Search of Something Different. I'll come back to you soon with the next episode, but until then, don't forget to stay curious.